You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right. So here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and you said what you used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we discuss Ryback's TLC match, Cena's love life, the Hardy Boys reunion, Brooke Hogan's love life, and much more. My name is David, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend Alex. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on this week, David.
You got it, and you have a nice Thanksgiving?
Absolutely, I did. My wife and I traveled to San Francisco. What did you and your family do?
Nothing quite that exciting. We traveled to my in-laws. They live two streets behind our house, so
that's something to be thankful for.
Yeah, right. Well, I guess thankful that they live a few streets away, not actually in our house.
Yeah, but with small children, I mean, that definitely is something to be thankful for. I mean, you can drop them off every once in a while, sneak away on a weekend, I imagine.
Yeah, the babysitting is nice. That does help. So I take it back, Alex. I had a great Thanksgiving. I am thankful for that.
Well, there you go.
Although the Cowboys got the tar kicked out of them, so that wasn't a lot of fun.
Yeah, and then the Lions-Texans game that never wanted to end.
I bet that Rex Ryan was happy the Jets game finally ended. Good Lord.
Yeah, and then we went to Sunday where Ray Rice ran 29 yards on a fourth down to beat the Chargers in overtime. So
yeah, I keep forgetting you're a Chargers fan. They're about as miserable as the Cowboys are.
Yeah, when your best option in the offseason is to blow the entire program up, it's pretty miserable.
Well, we have a lot of great wrestling to discuss today. Should we get to it?
Yeah, let's ring the bell.
World Wrestling Entertainment. CM Punk will defend his title at Tables, Ladders, and Chairs versus Ryback in what will now be their third straight pay-per-view match. Is this how you would have used Ryback so early in his ascent to WWE? Well, Alex, for me, I don't necessarily think this should be the third straight pay-per-view that he's headlining. I think that Ryback is an interesting character, and they needed an influx of new characters to kind of build some excitement around their roster. I think it's been kind of dragging lately. I like Ryback, and I think there was maybe next spring or next summer a time where I'd like to even see him with the championship. This feels a little rushed to me, and too many gimmick matches, too. They had the Triple Threat match. They had the Hell in the Cell. Now we're moving on to TLC. I'm a little lukewarm on this. What do you think?
You know what, David? I'm trying the best thing of the analogy that I can come up with to describe this situation, but I really can't other than just stating the facts. The numbers came in for Hell in a Cell, the pay-per-view buy rate, and it will end up being the second highest pay-per-view purchased of the B shows, which are the WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble. It will be the second highest purchase behind the pay-per-view after WrestleMania that was headlined by John Cena and Brock Lesnar. Huh. So this is maybe why we're seeing Ryback in his third main event coming up, and this may be the reason why a lot of preliminary talk backstage is that we might see Ryback Big Show at WrestleMania, which is actually a match I've suggested as well on this program.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would like to tell you that, no, this isn't the proper way to build a Ryback. He shouldn't be facing this level of talent yet, but he is. He's in there. The fans seem to be reacting to him. The numbers come in looking positive. Maybe they've created a new star via microwave.
And I agree with what you're saying. My counter to that, though, Alex, is we know CM Punk is moving on to The Rock at the Royal Rumble. And we know how this is going to kind of play out during WrestleMania season. So doesn't it kind of shoot down some of the excitement of these matchups with Ryback, knowing that, I mean, I don't expect him to win the title at TLC, do you?
Absolutely not. You know, this is the bread and butter season of the year, David. WWE is really contingent on building this WrestleMania program, because WrestleMania last year was the highest pay-per-view. It's the biggest pay-per-view they've ever done, and this year will most assuredly exceed that, and the year after that will exceed that. Did you know that pay-per-view is only 16% of WWE's business model, though? I actually found that out on the corporate site. So, I mean, these fall pay-per-views, as long as they don't hit a minimum they're okay. And Ryback, like I said, maybe slotted against Big Show at WrestleMania or something of the sort. So, yeah, but the money's going to be in Punk Rock and then Cena Rock.
Real quick before we move on, they brought the Shield in, basically, to attack Ryback. And it looks like they brought them in because when they have to move Ryback out of this main event feud for CM Punk to move on, that's going to be where he goes. Do you like Ryback and the Shield as a feud to carry them kind of through the spring until Big Show WrestleMania?
Absolutely, because you have Paul Heyman. I'm taking a different approach from it. I mean, you have Paul Heyman there for a finite amount of time. Paul Heyman's a volatile character who won't be in the company forever. So if you can get guys over while he's there, then I say go ahead. It also gives an out for Ryback to lose a couple of these matches. I mean, you have Brad Maddox messing him over. Now you have the Shield doing it. So I think you're killing a lot of birds with one stone, incorporating the Shield into this Ryback feud.
The romance between John Cena and AJ Lee has been a central storyline for several months now. Are you enjoying this angle, or is the romance angle itself basically dead? What do you think, Alex?
I'm not particularly enjoying it, but the reason why they went to the well about it, assumingly, is because TNA's recently done a love storyline on their programming, the AJ Styles-Chris Daniels storyline. So, it appeals to a different demographic. It appeals to the wives who hopefully are sitting there watching the product with their husbands, and then it gets them into it. Yeah, I don't think it's designed to appeal to me is basically what I'm saying.
Well, I always think these kind of things are funny when John Cena decides to finally express his affection right in the middle of the ring in front of the TV audience. Like, if this were, we're supposed to find some believability here, wouldn't he pull her aside after the show and say, hey, let's go grab an ice cream or something, But it's funny how wrestling has to play out everything in front of the TV cameras. And my question, though, is do we know too much about real life? Maybe back in the mid-80s, I really hung in there with these kind of stories. It was like, wow, Randy and Liz, I really bought the tension not knowing what the real life situation was. And we know John Cena and AJ are not together in real life. So do you buy it all on screen?
I don't think that has anything to do with it, David. I mean, like I said earlier with this Ryback angle, I mean, this angle was put into a microwave. I mean, over 4 weeks, we were able to see the two characters kiss on screen. I remember just back to WrestleMania 20, there's been many others after that, but WrestleMania 20, Trish Stratus, Chris Jericho, and Christian storyline, that was over a love angle, and that worked out very well. Triple H, Stephanie, and Kurt Angle come to mind, and Lita, Kane, and Edge come to mind. I mean, this can be done, David, but you have to spread it out. You have to give it time. But unfortunately, right now, it's done in a microwave, and we have to get this angle knocked out before the next pay-per-view, because that's when we need Dolph and Cena to wrestle.
Yeah. Well, by the way, can we just admit that sometimes watching kissing on TV can be a bit awkward? I mean, John Cena, he may be a fine kisser, but it comes across a little strange on, I don't know, and she's like a foot and a half shorter than him. But I do think this is a good spot for AJ in the sense that they kind of need something to keep her moving. She lost her GM spot, and I at least think this keeps her, viable in the company, high profile, and I do think she's marketable.
Seemingly, wasn't that what the Tamina storyline was supposed to be, though, is to give her something else to do where she can actually get a wrestling capacity again?
Right, right. And I think that's good. Because I do think that they have built her into a star or someone who's at least, usable each week. And the GM thing that took it away from her. And so I think at least this is moving her in a way that she can still remain on the show.
Yeah, she's showing a lot of promise. I mean, that's fine. I have no problem with AJ.
Oh, you better not. She's hot.
She's an attractive lass.
By placing Dolph Ziggler in a high-profile feud with John Cena, is he finally getting the push he deserves? Alex, on this show, you and I have talked about Dolph Ziggler quite a bit and about how you think they've really kind of buried him. They've kind of done him a disservice, even though he's been the Money in the Bank winner. Where do you think this is going for Dolph, and do you like this feud with Cena?
Well, no, because I don't like the fact that it's surrounded by a love interest storyline that makes no sense. But secondly, I mean, I just realized this week, is that Dolph, after getting a big win against Randy Orton and a couple of wins on television, I mean, when he's next to John Cena in this feud, he kind of looks main event. He looks like a main eventer. He wrestles like a main eventer. Now he talks like a main eventer. Now he's feuding with a main eventer. And it kind of has added a little bit of luster to the Dolph Ziggler character. Mm-hmm. And not only does it kind of add to the Dolph Ziggler character, I think it kind of adds to the mystique that is John Cena. A main eventer, a top guy, can only be judged by, well, he can be judged by a couple different things, but one of the things that I like to judge a top guy by is how many guys does he bring up to the next level. And John Cena's done it time and time again with guys, most notably Edge, and now he's presumably doing it with Dolph Ziggler. I mean, we'll have to see in the upcoming months what the company does with him, but he definitely looks like a main eventer staying next to John Cena.
Has he had the briefcase too long?
I don't think there's an amount of time you can hold on to the briefcase. I mean, he doesn't have to defend it seemingly into the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. So, I mean, for example, like the first time with Edge, I mean, Edge held it almost a year before he defended it. So, I mean, whenever the timing is right, that's when you strike. And I don't know if the timing will be right until, honestly, after WrestleMania.
Right, but I mean, like, as a gimmick. I mean, they've kept it on him. In some ways, we've talked about how they kept the briefcase on him to make him still seem like he's an important part of the roster, and he's got something going for him, yet he's been losing a lot of matches. Now he's been winning, and now he's in this feud. Again, is the briefcase, though, still a viable gimmick for the WWE character?
I think it is, and I don't really notice them kind of showcase. I mean, I might be completely wrong, but I haven't really seen them showcasing the briefcase as the past few weeks. It's almost like they kind of want you to forget it. It almost kind of makes me think that they're not going to do something with it until the WrestleMania season as they want to lock down these matches. Or, hey, maybe we could see them win it at WrestleMania. I don't know yet. But, no, I like the fact that he has the Money in the Bank, especially now that he's improving his stock. It kind of makes him a little bit more viable a threat than what it was a month ago when he was losing every match on television.
Mm-hmm. Well, what happens if Cena buries him in this feud? I mean, you know, it's great to be in that run with Cena, but what if Cena goes over every match here and looks real strong as they build him up for WrestleMania? Does that hurt Dolph at all?
That's going to be up to a lot of different factors. That would be the wrong thing to do. I mean, I think we both know, David, that Cena's winning. Or he may not. You know, honestly, we don't know that, I guess. I mean, John Cena easily could go into the Royal Rumble, win the Royal Rumble, get his title shot that way, and thus giving up a fall to Dolph. Mm-hmm. I mean, Cena isn't the type of guy that needs to win every match. I mean, we'll see what becomes of it. I mean, I think it's very logical that we can see Dolph beat Cena. I like how I worked my way out of that by myself on the air. But, yeah, I mean, we could see Dolph pin John Cena at the pay-per-view. I mean, that may have been what the knee injury was about, you know, to give Cena a logical out against Dolph. TNA Wrestling. Turning Point looks to have done 11,000 buys on pay-per-view. What does this mean for the company? I'll tell you what, one thing that it means is that it with a non-lockdown, non-Bound for Glory show, if you put Jeff Hardy on there, it guarantees you about 1,000 to 1,500 more pay-per-view buys. This is kind of low for a national company. Do you have any thoughts about this, David?
Yeah, it seems low to me. 11,000 doesn't sound very high at all. In general, though, what you're saying, Alex, is, I mean, I don't know much about the TNA pay-per-view numbers that they normally do. Is this wildly low?
Well, no. I mean, honestly, it's a little bit high for them. I mean, okay. Bound for Glory and Lockdown do a little bit more. Those are historically their big pay-per-views. But, yeah, I mean, the pay-per-views, depending on who's top, they do a little bit lower than this. Jeff Hardy actually adds about 1,000 buys, so Jeff Hardy is a draw, if you want to call him a draw, he's a draw to this company. Yeah, I mean, this is a national I mean, this is kind of to illustrate the divide between World Wrestling Entertainment when we're talking about, you know, 120,000, 130,000 buys on pay-per-view for their B shows. And for a TNA B show, we're looking at 11,000 buys. And 1 million people watch the television show. I mean, this shows you the divide between the two companies.
Yeah. Let me ask you, though. Well, first of all, what does a pay-per-view for TNA cost? Because usually WWE is like 50 to 60, right, for HD. What is it for TNA?
Same price.
Well, that's interesting. It's not really discounted there at all. I mean, the thing, and we're going to talk about internet pay-per-view here in a little while. It seems like there's a price point where if they dropped it a certain amount of money, maybe you'd get twice as many viewers and you know, make more money. I'm always interested in the price of these pay-per-views because let's say it was $20. Well, maybe I would order it now. I'd feel more, you know, open to ordering the pay-per-views every month if the price was lower. Do you think they could price it differently and get more views?
You know, what's interesting is that someone on the Figure Four Wrestling Board did an analysis of that for World Wrestling Entertainment pay-per-views and actually came back that they would have to sell. It wouldn't be cost-efficient for them to lower their prices. With TNA maybe lowering the prices or even restricting the number of pay-per-views, the 12 pay-per-view model was built during a different era
yeah.
when we'll get into this with iPay-per-views more, but when providing content was important because there wasn't enough content, for TNA, it might not be in their market to provide 12 pay-per-views if the fan base, if the customer support isn't there. So people have wondered for years why they don't drop a few pay-per-views. That way they could build them up more effectively on the television.
You mentioned that for WWE, it's about 16% of their overall revenues from pay-per-view. What would you estimate for TNA? How important is pay-per-view to TNA?
You know what? I have no idea because they're not a publicly traded company, so they don't have a right to publish that information. But it would be interesting to know what they do make on pay-per-view, because when you see these numbers, and of course they'll dispute the numbers up and down, but I mean when you see these numbers, you wonder why are they doing them at all if 11,000 people are ordering it, David. I mean that is low, 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 low. TNA Impact is averaging about 10% added viewers on the DVR. David, I mean, how often do you utilize your DVR? Wouldn't you think that the numbers would be a lot higher of DVR views?
Absolutely, because DVR is changing TV in general. We all know this. And you ask how often I use it. I put it this way. I just had to get a new one from DirecTV because I burned my old one out. I mean, I use it every day for hours because it's the only way we can watch television with two small children. And, you know, I don't have time for commercials. And, you know, I can blow through a basketball game or whatever. It's really, really nice to be able to do it. So, for me, it's critical. I'm shocked it's only 10% that are doing this for TNA. You know, wrestling also leads itself to taping the show and watching it later. Because sometimes you're not as interested in the segments, or sometimes you're not as interested in the long matches. And you want to just kind of get to the drama and the story. So, at 10%, boy, that seems awfully low in a day and age when everyone's using DVR.
You know, what's interesting, too, is that since I do the TNA portion, I put that about TNA Impact, but also the numbers consistent with Monday Night Raw as well, 10% added viewers on DVR. Okay. So basically what I'm saying by this point is that the majority of the people watch the show live and then 10% watch it on DVR, so you get an added 10% number once the DVR numbers come in for people that don't understand what we're talking about. But, yeah, I mean, DVR, it seems like it affects a lot of people's lives. It's very interesting how the ratings are done, because it seems like everyone I know watches it live, but maybe we're a small sample size of people who have DVRs. I wonder what the DVR proliferation into the market is. I mean, how many people actually have DVRs?
Right. See, it's interesting. I took that as a negative when he's about 10% added, and you're saying, you know, that maybe that means most people are watching it live. I guess, Alex, to follow up my point, I say that it means that the ratings just aren't that good. I mean, you look at Raw a week or two ago had pretty average or very poor ratings, especially the third hour it was just published. You know, to me, more people should be DVRing it and watching it later if they were really interested in the program. I think the problem is there's so many results and so much material on the internet, we don't feel the need anymore. I mean, I don't watch SmackDown anymore because I get 3 hours of Raw on Monday night. I'm kind of worn out from that, to be honest with you. And you know, man, I'll just read the results of Main Event and read the results of SmackDown, read the results of Impact, and I'm kind of good with that. So I don't even watch those shows normally, but I don't feel like I'm missing anything because you can watch them virtually, kind of just reading the results. There's great results sites out there. So I'm just surprised that number isn't higher with DVRs.
You know, Dave, I have 2 points to that. The first point is, on an unrelated note, is that last week, since CM Punk did the heart attack angle, or as I were 2 weeks ago, since CM Punk did the heart attack angle on Raw, CM Punk's segments have continued to drop when he's on television. So that lets me know that when people see him on television, they don't want to see him currently. Mm-hmm. And secondly, that UFC got a big contract because it was considered DVR-proof. People were watching it live. And WWE essentially is showing itself to kind of be DVR-proof as well. But because of angles like the CM Punk heart attack angle, they are always going to be dirty to advertisers. And advertisers aren't going to pay that much to advertise on pro wrestling because they look at the demographics as being low. So if you're a supporter of these stupid angles, think about that you are turning off whatever. People are turned off by this product. So it's okay to ask for higher brow professional wrestling. Brooke Hogan and Bully Ray are having a love affair, David. What are our thoughts on love affairs of pro wrestling? I kind of hit on it earlier. It's meant to appeal to the female demographic. The females are sitting there watching the program with the men, theoretically. This is the way to get them into the product. What are your thoughts, David? I mean, seeing all these love in the air and it's not Valentine's Day, is this something you're interested in, or is this something you fast forward on your DVR?
Well, you know, I could be interested in it, and I actually do like the Cena AJ Lee story, because I think she's fun, and I like Cena, so I don't have a problem with Brooke Hogan and Bully Ray. And you know, it's funny how people say, well, you know, maybe they stole the idea from TNA, or TNA stole it. You know, these, like you said, these angles have been around forever, so it's interesting to me, the name Brooke Hogan. I'm not sure if she's a viable product. If her last name, you know, maybe 10 years ago, Alex, she could have been a great character, because maybe the name Hogan hadn't been dragged through the mud as much with all the TMZ kind of stories. But and now being linked to Hulk Hogan, it's kind of like a Kardashian in a way. She can do good material, but I'm always going to kind of sneer at it a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, she's the girl who had a reality show, was very popular on the reality show, mm-hmm. and then tried to launch a music career, failed at that. So this is like her latest attempt to be a national figure, is to be on her father's wrestling television show that he helps run. And, so having Bully Ray, who's one of your top guys, involved in it. And, of course, I think this is going to build up to the big Aces and Eights angle, because I assume Bully Ray is going to be involved in it. So it's leading up to a big angle later.
Well, and I question, Alex, you know, does Brooke Hogan have a real love for this business? You know, I like people like CM Punk, because I feel like, man, he really does care about his performances and he cares about professional wrestling. Like you said, Brooke Hogan was a reality TV star. She tried a music career. This just seems like, hey, Brooke, show up at, you know, at this time and go out there and do this, and then she goes home.
You know, what's interesting is that, I mean, as a child of professional wrestling, currently I'm watching Garrick Bischoff against the Briscoe's son on television in a terrible match. But, I mean, if you're a kid like Garrett Bischoff, or if you're Brooke Hogan, and this is what your parents did, don't you kind of take the business a little bit for granted at that point, because my father was super successful in it? I mean, obviously, their second-generation stars are extremely successful. Just off the top of my head, Ted DiBiase comes to mind. Incredible performer, incredible professional wrestler, successful in all aspects of the business. But, I mean, you have people like Brooke Hogan and Garrett Bischoff who clearly go the other way, who kind of maybe take it for granted a little bit, and who don't really become good at it, you know?
Well, that's an interesting point, because let's say I was a Major League Baseball player, and he grew up around Major League Baseball. Well, you don't just get to play for the Red Sox because your dad was a Major League Baseball player. I mean, you have to have some talent, right?
Absolutely.
You still got to be able to hit a curveball. But in this, Hogan can just put her on TV. You know, so like to your point, like you can still kind of get a spot and be visible and have kind of a career at this, even if you're no good at it, because you don't really have to prove yourself if the right people are pushing you along. So I respect someone like DiBiase, or, you know, Randy Orton, and these guys that not only get there but then thrive.
When I was a child, my stepfather was in the Army, and I always asked him if I could join the Army without going through the boot camps. The boot camps sounded like the worst part. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I'm watching Garrett Bischoff and Wes Briscoe wrestle here. Both are terrible, and both should have went through their proverbial boot camps so they could have gotten a lot better professional wrestling on television.
Wild card topic number one. I read a rumor that the Hardy Boys may reunite next year in WWE. Is this a good move for WWE? Would TNA miss Jeff Hardy that much? Should they reunite on the indie scene maybe and maintain some of their character flexibility? Well, Alex, we just talked about Jeff Hardy spiking the TNA pay-per-view number. Sounds like, you know, they would miss him. I think that if they reunited in WWE, that they should come back as a team. I like them better together, and they could be a real shot in the arm to the tag team division, which they are actually trying to focus on. Would the Hardys back in WWE move the needle for you?
No, not at all. And I mean, with Dixie Carter's tweeting out the meetings that she's having with Jeff, I don't think, I think the rumor kind of got started because Jeff Hardy is going into contract renegotiations right now, and Dixie's real open about the fact that she's negotiating with Jeff. So the fact that Jeff has the title, I mean, the World Wrestling Entertainment, the TNA, I mean, it has a lot of drawbacks being in both companies, but if you have a significant amount of money, which the Hardy Boys have always, that's always been their reputation, they've had a lot of money. I mean, you can wrestle in TNA with a reduced schedule, have a lot of days off, And it would be better on you and better on your body to do that. Limited house show schedule. I mean, if I had money, it seems like TNA would be the way to go.
Well, that's a fun discussion point, because certainly we all work because we're getting paid, right? I mean, hopefully you enjoy your job, but the money is part of it. I mean, I need to get paid for what I do. And once you get a certain amount of money, you do have a certain amount of career flexibility. But you don't get to the point, I think, that Jeff Hardy and Matt Hardy got to in their careers, or any career, without enjoying, I think, some of the spotlight and some of the fame that goes along with being in a company like WWE. So do you balance that? Like, yes, you're right. The work schedule, flexibility in TNA is nice, but, you know, it's not WrestleMania. They're not wrestling at MetLife Stadium in April next year in front of, you know, 80,000 people, whatever it's going to be. So how do you balance or juggle those two things?
You know what, though? I mean, of all the acts, I think, of professional wrestling to be able to juggle those two things, I think the Hardys are kind of best suited to do that, because they were able to build up an incredible fan base independent of World Wrestling Entertainment. Now, obviously, if they're wrestling at WrestleMania or SummerSlam or any of these big pay-per-views, they'd have an infinitely larger fan base. But the Hardy Boys have a really big fan base just by themselves. I mean, if you go to a TNA house show event, you see a lot of fans coming to support the Hardy Boys. The Hardy Boys also ran an independent promotion in North Carolina prior to joining World Wrestling Entertainment. So they understand what it kind of they understand how to market themselves and keep their fan base engaged with what they're doing. Matt Hardy's been a bigger draw in the independent scene. You know, if these guys have enough money to stay away from the big corporate wrestling, then that's fine for them, you know?
Maybe I contradicted myself in the sense that I thought they should come back as a team. I enjoy them as a team. Would that be viewed as a step down for them to be back as a tag team?
I don't think so at all. I mean, if that's what the fans want, that's what the fans want. If that's what they want to do. I mean, they were one of the most revolutionary tag teams, I guess, of the 2000s with some of the work they were doing with the Dudley Boyz and Edge and Christian. And, I mean, I wouldn't see it as a step down, because they both had very successful singles careers, mm-hmm. and they haven't really had a downturn in singles careers. Matt Hardy's had a downturn in his career, but that's only because of personal problems. If they got back together as a tag team like they did TNA, they'd be extremely popular. Or if they came in a single act, they'd be popular. The Hardy Boys are very, very resilient in that way. Wild card topic number two. Six very interesting and different iPay-per-views are airing this month. Chikara, New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is having two. Combat Zone Wrestling, Evolve, and Ring of Honor are all having iPay-per-views. Is World Wrestling Entertainment missing out on something, David? I think actually my answer will surprise you, but first I want to get yours.
Well, I think they are. And one thing with internet pay-per-views we talk about is you can't have the technical glitches, because that's really disappointing to the people that pay and then can't watch the show. And I think that WWE could certainly run a clean iPay-per-view program with their technology and resources. So I think they are, and I think they are in this regard, Alex, because to me the cost of the monthly pay-per-views is just too expensive. I think they could run a few iPay-per-views throughout the year, maybe one a month, two a month, at a much lower cost, and maybe the show's only an hour. Maybe it's a focused program. And maybe you could even do some more R-rated material. Get out of, like, the PG, you know, Kofi Kingston versus Jinder Mahal match where you can't touch each other in the head. And make it a little bit more of an adult show. In that regard, I think they are missing out. Agree or disagree?
Actually, I disagree with you, David. I mean, we have 3 hours of Raw every Monday night, 2 hours of SmackDown, 1 hour of main event on ION. We also have a children's show that airs every Saturday morning. I mean, content delivery isn't an issue for World Wrestling Entertainment. I mean, if you're a fan of World Wrestling Entertainment, oh, and mind you, at least once a month we have a three-hour pay-per-view spectacular. So, I mean, content delivery is not an issue for World Wrestling Entertainment. Mm-hmm. If something happens on World Wrestling Entertainment, you can get a hold of it. For these internet companies, independent companies, David, it's a little bit harder. If I'm a fan of Chikara and they're running a show in Easton, Pennsylvania, it may not be costing, it may not be worth the cost for me to drive up there and see it. With me currently living in Nevada, I can't do it. But if I show live as it happens and join the conversation via social media, internet pay-per-view is the best way. And now New Japan for Wrestling portrayed the American market with their internet pay-per-views on Ustream. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of these independent companies doing it. If the fan base is there and you have a buzz to where the fans want your product, this is the easiest and fastest way to get it to them. I mean, I remember the day, David, when I used to have to order tapes and I have to wait 4 weeks for it to come in. David, even, I mean, the results were already dead and gone. David, they'd moved past the angle, and maybe some of the performers in the company had already left.
Yeah.
Now I could see it live, as so can the fans there sitting there. Internet pay-per-view for these independent companies is excellent. If I were TNA and World Wrestling Entertainment, though, and I gave so much to my fans already, I don't know if I'd move in this direction.
You know, you and I haven't agreed on one thing today. I don't think you've agreed with one thing I've said the whole show. We're making up for lost time. I think the first, 6 months, we agreed on everything. Last from the past. Jake the Snake Roberts is currently filming a documentary with Diamond Dallas Page entitled The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. Now, DDP himself had a really interesting career, and he's been a very positive influence on Jake during the filming of this documentary, helping Jake turn his life around. What do you remember most about DDP himself?
He was one of the main eventers WCW created, him and Goldberg. I mean, he was an incredible talent at an older age. I mean, he's almost an incredible success story. If he was I believe he was in his early 40s, late 30s when he got started in WCW.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people like that, David, are told to quit the business, leave, don't even think about it. Obviously, he was in the business before. I mean, he was even in NWA, WCW as a manager in the early 90s. DDP had an incredible career, in my opinion.
I liked him. I really enjoyed him. And he was a good talker. I thought he was a pretty good worker in the ring. I thought he had a kind of cool look. And, you know, even now, it's been a long time since I've seen him wrestle. You know, I still remember his finishing move, which I thought was a great move, the diamond cutter. Even the self-high five and, you know, his little catchphrases. I liked him a lot. I'll tell you what I really liked about Diamond Dallas Page was his wife at the time, Kimberly Page. Yeah. I went to Nitro, and after the show, a bunch of them were at a hotel bar there, and DDP and Kimberly were both there together. And I'll tell you, Alex, I mean, as God is my witness, she may have been the single most beautiful woman I've ever seen in real life.
Yeah, there you go. So if you include his in-ring success with his out-of-the-ring success, he's an extremely successful man. At one time, he was a strip club owner. I mean, DDP has lived quite the life, David.
Well, yeah, and what I like, you know, all kidding aside about Kimberly Page, I mean, she was great, but what I do like about DDP is that he is doing something now as he's moved away from the professional wrestling career that he had into this DDP yoga that's helping people. Certainly hear Jake talk about it. He's really helping him. And, you know, you got to respect someone who has resources and then helps people, you know, with their wisdom as they get older.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
It seems more like a reality show pitch to me, but yeah.
No. I mean, I agree with that with Jake, perhaps, but you know, a lot of the success stories that he's worked with in DDP Yoga in that business, you know, they're not getting broadcast anywhere, and it's not all just for the cameras.
Oh, yes, absolutely, absolutely. There are a number of names that DDP has helped out that is underreported. DDP does tout them out every once in a while, but, I mean, oftentimes he doesn't say all the names that he's helped out with this yoga program. And Chris Jericho's sworn by it, and a few other guys have legitimately sworn by it. So, I mean, yeah, it seems legitimate. He's really come on to something. His marketing's been very, very good. But, yeah, the Jake thing just seems to me like a reality show pitch. It's really unfortunate because I do want to see Jake clean. And every time he gets clean, I get happy. But, I mean, it's kind of at this point, I'm from the show me state. You know, show me something.
Can we agree on one thing today? Maybe we can agree on this. Look, before we wrap the show, we always talk about sports on this in addition to the wrestling. I'm really, really disappointed that we're still not even anywhere closer to having the NHL back on TV. A lot of people don't care about hockey. I'm a big hockey guy, and we're still deadlocked in this work stoppage. I feel like I haven't watched a Pittsburgh Penguins game in like 10 years. It just feels like forever. I mean, they got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs last year, so, you know, there wasn't that long grind in the Stanley Cup. And then it's just nowhere to be seen. You know, I feel like I haven't watched Sidney Crosby forever, and it's really disappointing. I really enjoy hockey. I guess the one good thing is this long break does give him some time to get even healthier, coming back from the concussion syndrome. So, you know, maybe that's a good thing. But I kind of find my interest slowing down a little bit. I mean, this is the second time now the NHL in the last 10 years has had a dramatic work stoppage. Oh, I even, you know, I was going to buy the EA Sports game, NHL 2013, because I haven't bought one of those in a while. I was all excited for the season. Now I don't even want the game anymore. I don't know. Do you watch hockey at all?
Not at all, but this doesn't lead you to root for the Moscow Bolsheviks of the Russian Hockey League, where a lot of these players are going to play now.
Well, have you ever read a story about it? I mean, you go overseas, and there's a lot of danger. Remember there was that tragic plane accident? Because a lot of the Russian airlines are not up to first-class standards of air travel. And so there was that hockey team a couple years ago that died. The entire team died in a plane crash. You know, so I don't know. I just wish they – I can't believe a sports league can't get together in one room and figure out how to divide the money pie.
I heard a story one time that women's basketball was huge in Europe, and a lot of the women supplemented their incomes from the WNBA by taking place in this women's Euro basketball league.
Huh.
Anyway, so Bjorn Revny announced that via the website, via Bellator website. Bjorn Revny is the president, owner, CEO of Bellator. Thank Vince McMahon and WWE, or thank Dana White, UFC. Basically, he announced that Bellator rematch can take place if the champion or challenger loses in a great fight, the press release says. This was called a win by notable MMA journalists all over. I read on many different websites, this is a win, David. This is not a win. This is stupid. Basically, this past fall, Michael Chandler and Eddie Alvarez had a match of the year contending fight that a lot of people got very excited for. It was one of the highest rated fights of that season, and people wanted to see a rematch between the two. But unfortunately, in the format of Bellator, you have to win a tournament before you can get a title shot. Right. And instead of Bellator rolling out a new, innovative, maybe creative way to get a return match for a title, they roll out this, if you have a good match, you'll get a rematch, which essentially means to me that, hey, if you're a star and you have a halfway good fight, we'll give you a rematch or whatever, which that's what the Ultimate Fighting Championship does. For the most part, it works for them. But if you want to be a secondary company in America, you have to do something different. If you want to give guys rematches, think of an innovative way to do it. You know, for example, I love Chikara Professional Wrestling's method of getting tag team title shots, which is you win three tag team matches, and then you get a title shot. I'm not saying that Bellator needs to go to the Chikara system, but come up with something creative.
I agree. Hey, we agreed on that.
Well, there we go. That's a good way to close out the show, then.
It is. Now, don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com. The latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of this show. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements, and we'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. So until next time, I'm David.
This is Alex.
We hope you've enjoyed the program, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio. All right, well that's okay.